Now a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now a black and white logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Station announcer, the train standing at platform 2 is the 450.
In a black and white film, titles appear over a train station. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Margaret Rutherford as Miss Jane Marple.
Chester and Brackhampton.
Arthur Kennedy as Dr. Quimper, Muriel Pavlo as Emma Ackenthorpe, and James Robertson Justice as Ackenthorpe in Agatha Christie's Murder, She Said. Copyright 1961, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, British Studios Limited. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Brian Gould and Christina Faust. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. In the station, an elderly woman strides down the platform to a newsstand and purchases a thin paperback. Pleasantly plump and dressed in a checked wool suit, she carries two bags and an umbrella. A porter follows close behind her, carrying a large valise. Guest starring Thorley Walters and Charles Tingwell, with Conrad Phillips, Ronald Howard, Joan Hickson, Stringer Davis, Ronnie Raymond, Gerald Cross, Michael Golden, and others. Based on the novel 450 from Paddington by Agatha Christie. Adapted by David Osborne. Screenplay by David Purcell and Jack Seddon. Music composed and conducted by Ron Goodwin. The white-haired woman boards a train, takes a seat in a cabin, and the porter places her valise on an overhead rack. The locomotive's double wheels turn slowly. The smoke billows from its stack, shrouding the engine as it pulls the train out of the station. Produced by George H. Brown, directed by George Pollock. Alone in her cabin, the woman puts on glasses and opens her pulp fiction novel. Below the title, Death Has Windows, a woman lies sprawled across a bed and a shadowy figure darkens the doorway. Later, the elderly woman sleeps with her novel open in her lap. A train passes in the next track, and the woman bolts upright. As the train whizzes by her cabin window, she puts her reading glasses in her purse, closes her novel, and places it on the seat beside her. On the next track, another train slowly overtakes hers. Looking out her cabin window, the elderly woman gazes into each cabin of the passing car. A businessman modestly turns away and eats a sandwich. In the next cabin, a little girl playfully sticks out her tongue. The elderly woman sticks out her tongue, too, and they make scrunched-up faces at each other. The window shades of the next cabin are down. Suddenly, a shade whips up to reveal a large man wearing a dark coat and leather gloves, strangling a young blonde woman. Her mouth thrown open and eyes bulging, the blonde woman struggles weakly, then falls limp as her train passes. In her own cabin, the elderly woman gapes in horror and sinks back into her seat as the conductor enters.
Tickets, please.
A woman has been strangled. I saw it.
I beg your pardon?
A man strangled a woman in a train. I saw it out there.
Strangled?
Yes, strangled. You must do something about it at once.
Me? Well,
He spots her mystery novel.
Madam, don't you think perhaps you had a little nap and maybe had a bad dream?
Young man, I was not dreaming. I saw it. What are you going to do about it?
Well, look, we'll be in Brackhampton in about 5 minutes. I'll report it as soon as we get there.
Thank you.
Could I have your name and address, please?
Yes, of course. Miss Jane Marple.
Marple?
Marple. Old Pasture Lane.
Pasture Lane.
Milchester.
I see. Very well, Miss Marple. I'll report this to the station master soon.
Yes, please do.
The conductor nods, then rolls his eyes as he leaves.
A bad dream, indeed.
Later, children play in a village street where a black sedan pulls in front of a brick house. Inside, Miss Marple scours through newspapers draped over her living room furniture, while a maid clears away a tea service.
All right, you'll see, I'll answer that.
Miss Marple opens the front door, and a man in an overcoat removes his hat.
morning, madam.
Not today, thank you.
She closes the door, but he stops it with his foot.
Inspector Craddock, County CID, madam.
Oh, I am so sorry. Do come in, Inspector.
The broad-shouldered inspector steps in.
I've just been going through all the papers again for the last 2 days, and still not a word about the murder. I suppose the police asked the press to say nothing for the moment. You sit down, won't you? Lull the murderer into a false sense of security, then pounce, eh?
Oh!
He sits on knitting needles.
Oh, how stupid of me. Yes, I am so sorry. Lucy! You will have some tea, won't you? Some tea for the inspector, dear, please.
Yes.
Well, now, have you got him?
Well, we have come to the conclusion that what you saw on the train was, a man and a woman.
Yes, as I said.
I mean, perhaps they were honeymooners.
Inspector, I may be what is termed a spinster, but I do know the difference between horseplay and murder.
Of course, madam, Miss Marple, but the fact remains that there's been a thorough search of every train, and no hospital has treated any woman such as you describe.
She was blonde and had on a coat with a pale fur collar.
And no such woman has been seen getting on or off a train either alone or with anybody else.
But of course not. She was dead.
Further, a complete search has been made of every inch of the tracks for the whole length of the line. Negative.
Oh. So you don't believe me?
I didn't mean to imply that.
You certainly did.
Not at all.
What then?
I assure you, Miss Marple, that a woman cannot be murdered on a busy train a few minutes before a station without our finding out about it.
I'm quite sure you mean well, Inspector. But if you imagine that I am going to sit back and let everybody regard me as a dotty old maid, you are very much mistaken. Good day.
As the door closes behind him, Inspector Craddock lets out a sigh and heads for his car. Inside, Miss Marple takes a wool cape from a hook beside the door, flings it around her shoulders, and tosses the ends of her scarf around her neck. Scooping up 3 hardcover books, she steps out of her rambling 2-story brick house and charges up the street. Now, in a library, a prim older woman waits at a circulation desk for a white-haired librarian.
Sorry, Mrs. Stanton. The hat rack hanging Falcon Smith's latest. I'm afraid we haven't received our copy yet.
Plain inefficiency. Anyway, I want to know the moment it comes in.
Of course, Mrs. Stanton. Oh, good morning, Miss Marple.
Good morning, Mr. Stringer. Good morning, Hilda.
They trade glares and Hilda walks away.
One moment. The hat rack hanging. I've been keeping it for you.
Miss Marple pulls him into an aisle between 2 bookshelves.
Mr. Stringer, would you say I was an unstable woman?
Oh, certainly not.
In full possession of my faculties?
Absolutely.
And not given to hallucinations?
I know.
Thank you, Mr. Stringer. The police think I'm dotty.
What?
Apparently what I saw was a young man and woman in the throes of connubial bliss.
I see. Well, if I were you, Miss Marple, I would certainly write to the chief constable.
Mr. Stringer, how many detective novels would you say we have read over the years?
Impossible to say. Certainly many hundreds.
Yes. Which gives us, wouldn't you agree, a certain knowledge of the criminal mind?
Almost assuredly.
Well, this is where we put that knowledge to the test.
We?
Yes, we.
Meanwhile, Hilda spots the book from Miss Marple on the circulation desk.
So it has come in.
Has it?
Well, I think I have first call.
I don't think you'll like it, Hilda. Too obvious. The mother did it, of course.
How can you possibly know that? The book has only just come in.
It always is with Falcon Smith. A deprived child, you know. Hot buttered crumpets for tea, Mr. Stringer, if you care to join me.
Indeed I would, Miss Marple.
Later, in Miss Marple's living room, Mr. Stringer warms a biscuit while Miss Marple studies a map.
Here we are. Now, I calculate the 5 o'clock express to Brackhampton overtook my train somewhere about there.
But how can you be sure?
Well, I remember the ticket collector saying 5 minutes to Brackhampton. Couldn't have been more than a minute after the murder he came in. So that makes it 6 minutes before Brackhampton, at, say, 30 miles an hour. So, about there.
But the body, Miss Marple?
Well, it seems clear that was thrown from the train between here and Brackhampton.
The police found nothing?
Of course not. The murderer returned before the search and disposed of the body.
By Jove, the police will certainly want to investigate now.
Well, according to them, there is nothing to investigate.
Oh, surely in the light of our theory, a fresh search.
Certainly, but this time we will conduct our own.
Eh?
Yes, Mr. Stringer. I recommend a hearty breakfast tomorrow. You and I are going to take an early morning walk.
Morning. Near a no trespassing sign, Miss Marple and Mr. Stringer, dressed in work clothes and caps, walk alongside train tracks.
There must be something somewhere. You can't throw a body out of a fast-moving train without leaving some kind of trace.
Miss Marple, if we linger here much longer, I feel certain we shall be apprehended.
Oh, nonsense. No one will give a couple of track layers a second glance.
I'm not altogether convinced our disguises are adequate.
A shoe, a bit of cloth, something.
I concede our timetable may have been out of date, but I'm quite sure the 7:15 is still running.
Very possibly.
But it could be most dangerous up here.
Undoubtedly.
Miss Marple continues searching while Mr. Stringer checks his watch. 7:14. He gasps. Quickly, he bends down beside the track and touches it. Laying his ear to the rail, his eyes bulge, and he jumps to his feet, staring down the tracks.
Miss Marple!
Marple. Yeah?
She's down a hill.
There you are. I think I heard something.
And I think I found something.
Mr. Stringer jumps as a train roars past. He scurries down the steep grassy hill and joins Miss Marple standing beside a patch of matted grass.
Consistent with something having been dumped from a train, wouldn't you say? If it was the body, it would roll down and finish up against this wall.
Then where is it?
That, Mr. Stringer, is the question.
Could be buried?
You'd need a pick or a shovel. No, this is hardly an ideal spot for disposing of a body. Unless...
She steps toward a 7-foot-high, ivy-covered stone wall and plucks off a clump of light-colored fir wedged between two stones.
From her fur collar, I think.
She points to the wall.
Mr. Stringer, will you kindly give me a leg up?
Really, Miss Marple, I have...
Please, Mr. Stringer.
He grabs her by the waist.
No, no. Make a stirrup.
He bends over and puts his hands together.
Careful. Are you ready?
Yes.
Interlock your fingers.
Oh, they are interlocked.
Oh. Well, are you ready?
He hoists her above the wall.
Magnificent.
She spots a burly man walking a German shepherd.
Down!
They crouch below the wall while the man and dog turn toward them.
What a frightful-looking man.
What a frightful-looking dog.
Miss Marple, prudence demands a retreat.
Mr. Stringer, I am convinced that the body is the other side of this wall.
But that's the Acanthorpe Hall estate.
No. Perfect. Easy enough for someone to come down out of the house, recover the body, and dispose of it somewhere in the grounds.
Someone from the house? You mean one of the family?
Yes, or one of the servants. They're lucky enough to have any. Servants. I wonder.
Miss Marple, whatever it is, no, no, no.
Mr. Stringer, we will withdraw. Temporarily.
Hunched over, they hurry along the path beside the wall. Later, Miss Marple climbs a flight of stairs past a sign, Mrs. Binster's Domestic Employment Agency. Dressed in a checkered suit and hat, she stands at a desk where a young man hooks a rug.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm afraid there's nothing on my books, madam. Not so much as a mother's help.
I'm seeking a post, not offering one.
He jumps up from his desk.
Pray be seated, do, my good woman. You need seek no more. You've come to the right place. How good to see the spirit of unselfish service is still with us. Now, let me see now. Yes, here's a perfect plum. Cheerful home for cheerful lady. Old suite, TV, radio, and a use of car. Tea in bed on Sundays, pension scheme.
Heaven forbid.
Oh, all right. Mrs. Forbes, Alexbridge. Setting up house near Monte Carlo. I won't have any foreigners, of course. Own gaming allowance.
And I don't approve of gambling.
Mrs. Hamilton Potts. The Dingley stud farm, you know. 7 children. Eldest 7.
Oh, no, thank you. Perhaps if I might have a quiet word with Mrs. Binster.
The gaunt young man closes his folder.
I am Mrs. Binster.
Oh, I see. Well, as a matter of fact, I wondered if there might be a position at Ackenthorpe Hall.
Ackenthorpe Hall?
Yes, Ackenthorpe Hall.
Oh, yes. I think I can accommodate you. Yes. There's always a vacancy there.
Now, a long black sedan passes through a stone arch while a train speeds overhead on an elevated track. Splashing through puddles in the bumpy dirt road, the car stops at an elaborate iron gate. Miss Marple steps out of the back seat, and a driver removes her valise from the trunk.
Thank you.
With a golf bag slung over her shoulder, Miss Marple carries her suitcase through the open gate and glances up at the tracks. Clutching her bags, Miss Marple warily begins down the stonewall-lined drive toward a massive stone manor. The German Shepherd watches her. Safely tied to a tree, the dog pants beside the burly man, who wears a felt fedora and wool vest. Methodically sawing a tree branch, he frowns grimly as Miss Marple hurries by, past a dry, four-tiered fountain, and to a set of double doors. She pulls the bell. She gazes suspiciously at a pair of stone lions guarding the entrance, then looks up the ivy-covered walls to a set of small attic windows. A middle-aged woman with pinned-up hair and an apron steps outside.
Yes? I'm Jane, from Mrs. Binster's employment agency, the new maid.
Well, you look old enough to know better. Come in.
They enter a spacious foyer decorated with diamond brocade wallpaper. A mounted moose head hangs opposite an elaborately carved staircase. Miss Marple sets down her luggage in the center of the room.
I'm to see Miss Ackenthorpe.
You're expected.
Oh, come
here. Miss Marple knocks on a heavy wooden door, then steps inside where a pretty young woman sits at a writing desk.
Miss Ackenthorpe.
Yes?
I'm Jane.
The new maid?
Yes, Jane Marple. Now, if you'll kindly show me where I'm to put my things, I'll...
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. But I'm wondering if this post is really what you're looking for, Miss Marple.
Well, naturally. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
I don't want a housekeeper, you know. I want someone to... well, to do the work.
Yes. You want cooking, washing up, beds made, floors scrubbed, fires lit, ashes taken away. I quite understand.
Well, I hope you'll find us suitable.
Oh, I'm sure I shall.
Perhaps you won't find the work too exacting. There are only the three of us. Myself, my nephew, down from school for the holidays. And then there's Father. May I show you to your room?
Yes, certainly.
Miss Ackenthorpe reaches for Miss Marple's valise.
I'll take that, my dear. Perhaps the clubs, if you wouldn't mind. I must keep fit, you know.
Yes, of course.
They head upstairs.
Our staff consists of Hillman, the gardener, and Mrs. Kidder, she let you in. She comes in from the village 3 afternoons a week to do the rough work.
They stop at a portrait.
That was my grandfather. He founded the family fortune. Tea biscuits, you know.
Oh, yes. And very excellent biscuits they were, too.
Quite a severe man, I'm afraid.
She stops short and frowns.
Miss Marple, I think it only fair to explain to you that my father himself is... well, quite frankly, he's a bit difficult at times. He's an invalid, you know. He's very keen on economy, and he sometimes says things that upset people. I wouldn't want you to...
Oh, I'm quite used to looking after elderly people of all sorts. We'll manage.
Upstairs.
Emma! Emma! Can I hear you?
Yes, Father. Excuse me a moment.
Don't try to sneak off. Is that the new girl with you?
Yes, Father.
Hope she's got a bit more meat on her than the last one. Can't stand them skinny. Well, don't just stand there, boggling girl. Bring her in. I want to look at her.
Yes. Will you come in, please?
Resting on a chaise lounge, the stout Ackenthorpe has a thick pointed beard and half glasses. The gardener tucks a blanket around his legs.
Father, this is Miss Marple. Jane.
I'm a plainer Jane I've never set eyes on in my life.
Well, we can't all be young and handsome, can we, Mr. Ackenthorpe?
There is one thing I cannot tolerate, and that is impertinence.
Well, we should get on admirably. Neither can I.
Well, if you're coming to stay here, and I suppose you've got to, there's one thing you'd better understand straight away. Because I live in a big house, it doesn't necessarily follow that I'm a rich man. So there's no good coming here with extravagant ideas. I live here because I want to, not because I can afford it.
Father, don't you think...
No, I don't. Can you cook?
If you want good English cooking, yes.
Cod's as good as lobster any day, and much cheaper.
He smokes a cigar.
Well, that depends on whether or not one has a palate unsullied by cheap opiates.
If you mean what I think you mean, I'd have you know this cheroot costs 2 shillings.
Yes, quite.
I'll show Miss Marple to her room. This way, please.
Good idea.
He blows out smoke. Emma closes the door and the two women collect Miss Marple's valise and clubs in the hall.
That was Hillman, the gardener. When Mr. Ackenthorpe wants to move about, he always calls him. They're quite close. Will you be staying, Miss Marple? Jane?
My dear lady, of course.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Emma! Come back here. You've forgotten my medicine.
Excuse me a moment. That's your room, just down there. The door opposite the head of the small stairs.
I'll find it, don't you worry.
Can I give you those?
Yes, of course.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
Carrying her bags, Miss Marple heads down the hall alone. Reaching the top of a short staircase, the plump Miss Marple gazes down a sparse hallway to another set of stairs, then enters the room ahead of her. Simply furnished, the small bedroom has a bed with a tall brass headboard and footboard, 2 bureaus, and a chair placed beside a fireplace in the corner. Dropping her valise and clubs by the bed, Miss Marple hangs her cape and scarf on a hook behind the door. She notices a dark curtain hanging against one wall. She throws open the curtains, revealing a door. She opens the door to a large spare room filled with odd chairs, desks, and a dressing dummy. A bare light bulb hangs from the ceiling. She scans the room, then turns around, closes the door, and redraws the curtains. Removing her hat by a mirror, she notices the curtains moving behind her. Someone's eye peeks out from between the curtains, then disappears. Miss Marple spins around.
Come out at once.
She picks up a vase.
I advise you to come out.
She aims at the curtains.
Very well.
She hurls it. It flies through the open doorway into the next room. Holding her determined focus on the curtains, Miss Marple slides a wooden driver from her golf bag and takes hold of the swaying fabric. Suddenly, her doorknob turns. She dashes behind the door just as a blonde-haired boy bursts into the room.
Ah!
The boy wears a blazer and a tie.
You're Miss Emma's nephew, I presume.
Yes, Alexander Eastley. How do you do?
How do you do? I'm Jane. Jane Marple.
Yes. It is disappointing, isn't it? I'd rather hoped for the Jane Mansfield type.
I see you have something in common with your grandfather.
Oh, we're very alike in many ways. Mind you, I'm not mean with money. He'll stop that vase out of your wages, you know.
It's just as well you got out of the way. Otherwise...
It'd have been my head, and you'd have got 10 years.
That is still possible.
She opens her valise and begins to unpack. Alexander takes a seat.
You know, it isn't just that you don't look like Jane Mansfield. You're not my idea of a maid, either.
Well, quite honestly, I don't think you'd be everybody's idea of a boy.
You know, there's something decidedly fishy about you. I can see you'll have to go. After Mrs. Kidder, of course, she's next. Depressing creature. So was Annie.
Annie?
Your predecessor. Thin as a rake and a shocking cook. Can you cook?
Well, I think I've done better than Annie.
Grandfather's like that, too, and he hates his dinner to be late. I'd leave your unpacking until later if I were you.
Well, in that case, hadn't you better show me the way to the kitchen, Alexander?
Very well. Jane?
He strides to the door and holds it open. They step into the cluttered hall past a bed frame, a mirror, and pictures.
Emma!
That's him, always shouting about something, mostly money. This way.
Emma!
Of course, they're all waiting for him to drop dead, you know. Frightful pack of vultures, our family. Except possibly Aunt Emma.
And who are these vultures?
Oh, there's Uncle Harold, stinking rich and just as mean. Uncle Albert, deadly dull, poor fellow. Then there's Uncle Cedric. He paints, but not for art's sake. Do you know, last year, he and one of his models...
He whispers in her ear.
Alexander!
Well, he's like that. There was an Uncle Edmund.
Was?
Yes, stopped a whole bomb during the war. All by himself. Wasn't another man around for miles. Deserting, probably.
And who can be held responsible for you?
Well put. Mummy's name was Edith, but she's dead. Daddy's Brian Easter, you know.
Oh?
You know, the fighter ace, Battle of Britain.
Oh, the Brian Easter.
Yes. I'm going to set him up in business when I get my inheritance from Grandfather. Here we are.
They enter the kitchen where Mrs. Kidder waits.
Well, there you are, and about time, too. Well, I'm off. I wouldn't stay in this place after dark, not for all the tea in China. Now, look, the pots and pans are on that shelf there over the stove.
Oh, yes.
And the groceries and provisions in there.
Thank you.
What's your own?
Good day.
Good day, Mrs. Kidder.
What's the matter with you?
I was merely being polite.
She rolls her eyes and leaves.
Charming, isn't she, Jane? I think you should see this. Come on.
What?
Phase 4, anti-Kidder campaign.
Outside, Mrs. Kidder unknowingly pulls a tethered goat behind her bicycle. The goat chases Mrs. Kidder as she runs down a path.
Splendid.
Miss Marple gapes.
Dinner at 8, please, Jane.
Alexander leaves, and Miss Marple's angry frown turns to an amused grin. That evening, below a clock reading 11:07, piles of pots and pans and china fill the kitchen counter. Beside them, Miss Marple sleeps peacefully in a rocking chair, her hands folded in her lap. Outside, Hillman, the gardener, glances at her through a window, then opens the door. Tall, with a high forehead and brawny build, Hillman's long arms dangle out of his tweed jacket. Moving slowly through the shadowy light, he stands over Miss Marple and stares at her with a stern glower. Shifting his heavy, brooding eyes, Hillman steps past the sleeping woman to a wood-burning stove and picks up a long iron poker. Miss Marple's eyes flash open and she sits up. Hillman stirs the stove's fire, glances at Miss Marple and tosses the poker aside. With a humorless gaze, he stands over her.
I see you made yourself comfortable.
I trust you have no objection.
Maybe.
Hillman lumbers toward the door and stops.
I shouldn't make yourself too comfortable if I was you.
Hillman leaves and closes the door. Miss Marple stands up and peers out the window. Outside a nearby outbuilding, Hillman glances around, then opens a door and steps inside. Miss Marple shifts her gaze across the moonlit lawn to a large tree where Emma faces a young man in a suit. She gives his arms a squeeze, then they go separate ways. Turning from the window, Miss Marple walks over to the sink, piled high with dirty pots, and rolls up her sleeves. Daytime. A white sedan pulls around the fountain in front of Ackenthorpe Hall. A tall man wearing a fedora and wool overcoat steps out of the car. He smiles. Carrying a black case, he rings the doorbell. Inside, Miss Marple hurries across the foyer and slips on a rug. Regaining her balance, she lifts the rug, removes a roller skate, and frowns. With a skate in her hand, she opens the door, letting the man in the overcoat inside.
Yes?
Oh, who are you?
I'm the new maid, sir.
Dr. Quimper, you get used to seeing me here.
He notices the skate.
Alexander, I suppose.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Well, Mr. Ackenthorpe will be expecting me.
Oh, yes. I'll show you up.
Oh, that won't be...
She charges toward the stairs. In Ackenthorpe's bedchamber, someone crawls underneath the silk sheets.
Doctor...
Well, on earth am I confounded matches?
He looks up.
Oh, it's you.
Good morning.
Good morning. What are you doing in here? Snooping, I suppose. Where are my matches?
Miss Marple plucks them out of his shirt pocket, and he snatches them away.
If you're going to smoke, we'd better have some windows opened. I'm a great believer in fresh air. Aren't you, Doctor?
Why, yes, I am, Miss...
Marple, her name. Marble, her nature.
She glares at him.
That's right. Let her give me double pneumonia. You can't kill me off one way, you'll kill me off another.
Nonsense. You're going to live to be 100 in spite of anything I can do.
Well, in that case, tell that woman to stop opening windows and to light my cheroot.
Is there any chance that will send him to sleep, Doctor?
I'm afraid it's a stimulant.
He prepares a hypodermic needle.
Roll over.
Oh, dear.
She lights a match for Agenthorpe.
Hold it closer, woman.
The doctor jabs in the needle.
No!
Agenthorpe winces, tosses the unlit cheroot, and faces the doctor.
Your hometown lost a good horse, Doctor, when you left, Grimper.
Matter of fact, I was very bad with the horses. How'd the birthday party go? All the family get down all right?
Of course they did. They had a whole weekend of it. Free board and lodging from Friday night.
Friday?
What's that to do with you?
Oh, nothing. It just happened to be an interesting day for me, too. How old were you, Mr. Agenthorpe?
Mind your business. Anyhow, it was a miserable weekend. And I hope it'll be a long time before I have to put up with the whole pack of them again.
Not a very nice way to talk about one's family.
Not a very nice family. And you know what that overgrown beatnik Cedric did? Told Emma right in front of my eyes she ought to get out of here. Get married or something. Trying to make her as selfish as he is.
Oh, I don't know. If Emma did marry, it wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Emma steps in.
Father, I thought I'd tell you. I'm just going into town.
I'll be leaving in a moment. Can I give you a lift?
What do you want to go into town for? Can't she go for whatever it is?
Well, it's tradesmen, Father. A few bills to pay.
Oh, money. Oh, that's a different thing. Can't trust anybody these days. All right, off you go.
In that case, may I be of service?
Oh, thank you.
Of course you can, Quimper. Save the price of a taxi. Pay you enough as it is.
It'll be on your bill. Are you ready now?
Only my coat.
Good. Friday then, Miss Agenthorpe. Good day, Miss Marple.
Good day, Doctor.
If you don't shut those windows, you'll be fired.
In that case, I shall require 4 weeks' wages in lieu of notice.
Get out of my sight, woman!
With pleasure!
As she leaves, Agenthorpe rolls out of bed. Wearing striped pajamas, he walks to a window using a cane. Outside, Dr. Quimper closes his car door for Emma. Miss Marple watches the couple leave from the downstairs window. She listens attentively, then hurries back upstairs. Now, out in the grounds, Miss Marple sets down a golf ball and readies her club. Alexander spies on her from behind a tree.
Your weight isn't quite evenly distributed.
I'll have you know that I won the Ladies' Open Handicap in 1921.
Really?
I'm sure you have many things to do.
Not at all. I'm most interested. We've never had a golf playing maid before.
You may have heard that this is the age of the common woman.
She swings and the ball sails far left.
You hooked.
I'm aware of it.
Miss Marple sets down another golf ball and swings. The ball slices sharply to the right and lands at the base of the train track hill.
You know something?
What?
I believe you pulled those shots on purpose.
Alexander, if you wish to be helpful at all, will you kindly look for the hook while I look for the slice?
Working nearby with his dog, Hillman the gardener watches Miss Marple and Alexander head in opposite directions after the balls. As the train passes above her, Miss Marple spots her ball lying in the grass. Warily scanning the area, she watches Alexander disappear into some brush. She slyly picks up her ball and steps toward the high stone wall running along the border of the property. Searching for his ball, Alexander notices Miss Marple walking near the stone wall through the dry overgrowth. Miss Marple finds a sapling beside the wall with several of its branches snapped and bent down. Staring ahead, she discovers a narrow path leading through tall grass and leafless trees. Holding her golf club tight to her side, Miss Marple strides down the path, carefully searching the grasses on either side. Across a field stands a collection of barns and sheds. Miss Marple stops, and Alexander steps up behind her.
Found yours yet?
Yes. Have you?
Disappeared without a trace.
Oh, well, fortunately I have some more.
At the present rate, you're going to need them.
Perhaps you'd care to demonstrate the next one.
Certainly.
He delicately takes her ball and club.
Let's see how close you can get to those outbuildings.
Yes, I think that's possible.
He aims for the cluster of buildings 50 yards away. The ball sails straight toward them.
Fair. You know perfectly well it was superb for a boy of my age.
With a smile, Miss Marple puts her arm around him and they start off. They walk to a barn where the German shepherd sniffs Alexander's golf ball outside the door.
Right on the fairway, a chip and a putt and I'd have holed out in three.
Does your grandfather keep horses, Alexander?
He did. Now he just keeps a few relics of a more spacious age. Nostalgia, you know. A failing of the old, I suppose. Like to look.
Well, I think I'm old enough, don't you?
Alexander opens the double doors. Inside the straw-littered barn are four horse carriages.
Oh, an old-fashioned pony chaise.
They used that for going to the village.
I suppose they used the Victoria for going to church.
Yes, on Sundays in the summer, I believe.
And the broughams for visiting in the winter, perhaps?
Yes, I expect so. It's supposed to be haunted here, you know. Grandfather found a man hanging from this rafter.
Good heavens.
He'd been dead for a week.
That will do, Alexander.
All purple, you know.
Alexander. What was that?
I wonder.
All right. I'll look.
All yours.
A chicken flies out of a carriage.
Dear, dear, we are nervous, aren't we?
He picks up an egg.
Pity.
Well, what did you expect to find?
Bodies.
What?
Live ones, of course. Used to be quite the spot for courting couples from the town.
Really?
Till Grandfather got Hillman to put a stop to it. Spoil sport. Quite extraordinary, the goings on here. Apparently there was this girl...
That's enough, Alexander. There may be some other poor bird trapped.
She inspects another carriage while Alexander puts down the egg and spots something in the straw. He picks up a small keepsake box with intricate engravings and opens its lid.
Look at this. Somebody else must have been in here. This isn't Aunt Emma's.
It's mine. I must have dropped it. Thank you so much. It was bequeathed to me.
You're not by any chance on the run from the police, are you?
Too much television. You must learn to rationalize your imagination. What's behind there? More relics from the past?
Matter of fact, yes. The fruits of Grandfather's Egyptian phase.
Indeed. How interesting.
She stands at a large wooden door and slides open a lock. Bending down, she tugs on a second lock near the floor. As she reaches up for the final lock, Hillman rushes in and grabs her arm.
No one's allowed in there.
Let go of my wrist.
What are you up to?
Up to? The boy was simply showing me round.
What boy?
Alexander.
You're lying.
Alexander, come out of there at once.
He steps out from behind a carriage.
I thought discretion the better part of valor, Jane. This fellow's not above clipping a person's ear.
You know your grandfather don't like no one sneaking round here. Don't think I won't tell him neither.
Despite the double negatives, I'm sure you will. Come, Jane.
Good for you, young man.
Hillman locks the door. In her bedroom, Miss Marple closes the musical compact, then hides it under her handkerchiefs in her top dresser drawer. A clock reads 2 minutes till midnight. After a momentary hesitation, Miss Marple grabs a black flashlight from her dresser and opens the door to the dark moonlit hallway. Setting the flashlight down, she lifts her cape from the hook behind the door and wraps it around her shoulders with a hearty toss. She retrieves the flashlight and heads out of the room. In his bedchamber, Mr. Ackenthorpe yawns and awakens, having fallen asleep with a newspaper in his lap. In the dark hallway, Miss Marple stealthily reaches Ackenthorpe's door and listens. Inside, Ackenthorpe's keen eyes fix on his closed door as he rises unsteadily, gripping a thick wooden bedpost for support. The portly invalid stretches to a bookshelf, retrieves a small bag of candy, and innocently pops one in his mouth. Miss Marple creeps downstairs to the foyer, her flashlight cutting the darkness. Startled, she flashes her light onto a grandfather clock. Slipping out the front door and into the moonlit yard, Miss Marple gazes warily up at the mansion. The German shepherd lazily watches the elderly sleuth pass by his doghouse. Miss Marple creeps into the carriage barn and closes the door behind her. Moonlight casts eerie shadows of spoked wheels across one wall. She crosses the room to the wooden door and opens a latch. She reaches for the top sliding lock and the door opens. She gazes around the dark, cobwebbed room. Her flashlight reveals an alligator head and a lizard mounted to the wall. Above her stands a stuffed, sharp-eyed buzzard with spread wings. Slowly, she turns around to see a mounted human head. Realizing it's a bearded tribal mask, Miss Marple steps further into the room. Among cluttered pottery, vases, and statuettes lies a stone sarcophagus, decorated with a relief of an Egyptian pharaoh. The 4-inch-thick stone cover lies slightly ajar, separated from the box by a wide sword blade stuck between them. Miss Marple sets down her flashlight, wraps both hands around the cover, and heaves. The heavy stone budges only an inch. Grabbing her flashlight, Miss Marple bends down and peers into the crack between the cover and the ancient sarcophagus. She straightens up and shines her light on a second sarcophagus. Its lid is much thinner, with a faded carving. Miss Marple takes hold of the 7-foot-long lid and throws it open on its hinges. Wincing, she bites her thumb and shakes it, then glances down. Inside the straw-lined coffin lie a woman's legs. Clad in a long black dress, the body has a ring on one finger and wears a coat with a fur collar. Later, Mr. Stringer on the phone.
What? No. No.
Now listen, Mr. Stringer. I want you to inform the police, anonymously. Don't mention me yet. I wish to be in at the kill, so to speak.
Miss Marple, really? All right. But it makes my blood run cold to think of you there alone. I was wondering, perhaps they have a vacancy for a gardener. Oh, they've got one. Very well. I'll do as you say. Miss Marple, the compact. If the murderer should know that you have it...
I'll be careful, dear Mr. Stringer. I'll phone the inspector right away.
Lying in his bed, Mr. Stringer toggles his receiver handle. In Acanthorpe Hall, Miss Marple heads upstairs. Daytime. Hillman rolls Mr. Acanthorpe's wheelchair into the barn's Egyptian room, where detectives dust for prints, and Inspector Craddock lifts a blanket covering the body.
Well?
Never seen her before in my life.
No, she's not from these parts.
Well, whoever she is, I want her out of here at once. If you hadn't left the barn door unlocked, this wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have had all these people poking their noses into everything.
Hillman wheels him into the carriage room, where Emma and Dr. Quimper stand waiting.
Are you all right, Father?
Of course I'm all right. Think I've never seen a corpse before? Be one myself soon.
Perhaps you'd better go back to the house. I'll follow you up.
As they leave, two bobbies carry out the body on a stretcher. Craddock stands over the larger sarcophagus.
Whoever it was tried to get her in here first. Must have taken the strength of a maniac to shift it this far.
Inspector?
Oh, yes, Doctor.
I don't know whether this is being helpful.
Go on.
Well, the woman, no one recognized her, and her clothes struck me as being foreign, perhaps French.
Yes, that's very interesting. Yes, thank you, Doctor.
Well, it was just a thought.
Maybe a useful one. Thank you.
Quimper leaves. Frowning thoughtfully, Craddock paces across the room. His sergeant stands beside him.
Well, that would explain why I didn't recognize her, sir. I knew every face for miles around.
I'm sure you do, Sergeant. Still, I have to start with the assumption that there's some connection between her and the family. I think I'll get the whole bunch down here.
There'll be fireworks, sir. They hate the sight of each other.
So I believe. Anyway, routine first. They got any other servants apart from this gardener?
Yes, they have, Inspector.
He turns slowly, furrowing his brow in disbelief.
Good Lord.
You?
Yes. Dotty old me.
She proudly raises her chin. Later, behind the house, the inspector and his men comb the grounds and the steep slope beyond. The inspector, in his dark overcoat and fedora, kneels beside an item in the grass. Before he can pick it up, Alexander skewers it on the end of a spiked cane.
In there, please.
It's only a cigarette packet of doubtful significance, I'd say.
I'll bear your views in mind.
Any idea what you expect your fellows to find?
Clues.
Well, naturally. But do you seriously think they'll find anything?
Well, somebody dragged the body from there over to there. It's possible something could have been dropped in the process. Don't you agree?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Did you find anything?
No, Inspector, not a thing. Family's here, by the way.
Thank you. I'll get around to them later.
They'll enjoy that, I'm sure. Good hunting.
Now, Miss Marple serves the family coffee in the dining room.
Some silly idiot goes and strangles his girlfriend, which he probably richly deserved, and what do? Swarm all over the place, mess about in our private affairs. And I said to this inspector fellow, Haddock or whatever his name is.
Craddock, sir. Shall I pour?
Of course. Anyway, I said to this fellow, Haddock, that no member of my family had ever seen the woman before. That was final.
Well, what makes you so sure of that, Father?
Oh, now, look here, Cedric, this is absurd.
Well, after all, Harold, she wasn't somebody from around here, and she was found in our stable, wasn't she? One of us could have known her. She could have been your girlfriend, dear boy.
What?
Yes, yes, I suppose Cedric has a point there.
He never has a point.
I mean, from the police point of view.
It's all right for you, Easley. I don't suppose you're too concerned with the family reputation. After all, you're not a member of it, are you? Strictly speaking.
What I can't understand is who telephoned the police.
Oh, I know who did that.
Oh? Who?
Obviously, someone who knew the body was there. Any coffee left, Jane?
Help yourself.
It certainly wasn't one of us.
Who knows?
Who cares who did it anyway? The woman was probably a spy.
That's absurd, Father.
Well, the police think she was a foreigner, don't they?
But lots of English girls go to Paris and buy French clothes.
Decent ones, don't.
Dr. Quimper to see you, Mr. Appenthorpe.
Still getting shot with revitalizers, Father?
I'd take anything to outlive you lot and keep my property from your thieving hands.
Emma follows her father out, closing the door.
Well, I'll just go and see if I can be of any further assistance to the police. Delicious coffee, Jane.
Speechless, she accepts the empty demitasse from him.
By the way, the inspector said he'd be interrogating you all later. Better get your alibis ready.
Oh, he's a bright boy, that one. Well, let's face it, the police say the woman was murdered on Friday, and we were down here last Friday. They're going to be very interested in all of us.
But none of us were here till quite late.
Yes, but the point is, what were we all doing earlier? Albert, what about you?
Me?
Yes, you. And don't tell me you're sitting in your office all day.
No.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, there was a film that I particularly wanted to see.
Of Brigitte Bardot. Oh, look, Cedric, this is preposterous.
Oh, but is it, Harold? Anyway, what about you? Or can your secretary verify all your movements on that day?
That's none of your business.
Well, I'm in the clear. I was at my club.
It has a back door, hasn't it?
Yes, I think so. But I didn't get here until Saturday.
But you could have lugged the body up here on Friday, slipped back to London, and be sitting in your usual chair when the club closed.
And I suppose one of your women friends can vouch for you.
Well, I'm certain my current comfort will satisfy the inspector completely. As no doubt will your secretary.
Harold turned sharply to Miss Marple.
When you've finished here, will you kindly bring me some fresh coffee into the library?
Certainly, sir.
Well. Jumpy, isn't he?
And you're very calm. But then I've no reason not to be.
Eastley takes a seat. The balding Albert strokes his chin.
I've just been thinking. If that woman was foreign...
You should think of girls more often, Albert. Might bring about some interesting changes in you.
I know it's laughable.
I agree.
No, but I mean, if she was French, could be her, I suppose.
All right, I give up. Could be who?
That Martine woman.
Martine?
Yes. You know that French farm girl we had all the trouble about? The one Edmund was so infatuated with before he was killed.
But that was ages ago.
Yes, I know. Still, I suppose it is possible.
But why should she turn up dead in our stable 16 years later? Oh, it's preposterous.
Well, it isn't my idea.
Well, whose idea is it, then?
Well, Emma's.
Emma? Emma's? That's odd.
Miss Marple raises her eyebrows. Later, the doctor leaves Ackenthorpe's room. Emma stands behind a cracked open door down the hall. Quimper slips into the room, placing his hat and case on a bureau. Emma closes the door. Suddenly, they throw their arms around each other and share an intense kiss.
Darling.
No, Paul, please.
How much longer are we going on like this, Emma? We've got to tell the old man whether he likes it or not.
Not yet, please, not yet.
Why?
Paul, I think someone in the family may be a murderer.
Emma.
I've had a letter. I can't keep it to myself any longer. I want you to read it.
I'm afraid my French isn't up to this, Emma.
Oh. Dear Miss Ackenthorpe, you will be surprised to hear after so many years that you have a sister-in-law. I married your brother Edmund 2 days before he was killed in action. I decided it was best to forget the marriage, but now I'm planning a visit to England, and I find I do wish to meet you all. I write to you instead of your father because I understand he is a sick man, and my existence may come as a shock to him, as it must be to you all. Sincerely yours, Martine Ackenthorpe.
But I thought Edmund was killed before they had a chance to marry.
That's what we all thought.
What's on your mind, Emma?
Well, don't you see? The strangled woman, it must have been Martine. Listen, if she could have proved she was really Edmund's widow, she'd have been entitled to a share in the will.
Oh, I see.
Paul, what shall I do?
Have you told the others?
No. I did suggest to Albert that if the woman was French, she might be Martine.
What did he say?
He said it was fantastic, but I think he was worried.
Quimper sits beside Emma, wrapping his arm around her.
You'll have to tell the police.
They're bound to think one of the family did this.
What else can you do?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think you must tell them.
I'll have to think about this. You better go.
She caresses his face, then leads him to the door. As he collects his hat and case, Emma opens the door, looking left and right. As Quimper leaves, Miss Marple appears in the hallway.
Good afternoon.
Miss Marple watches him curiously, then proceeds down the hall, eyeing Emma's door, which stands slightly ajar, then closes after she passes by. Upstairs, Miss Marple finds the door to her own room open and advances cautiously. Her bed is undone, and clothing hangs from the open dresser drawers. She hurries across the room and searches through the top drawer. Finding nothing under her handkerchiefs, she purses her lips in annoyance. Nighttime. Mr. Stringer, in a tweed suit and cap, pedals a three-wheeled bicycle along a street lined with brick cottages. Parking in front of Miss Marple's house, he runs to the front door. Inside, Inspector Craddock stands in the living room.
Oh, there you are.
The train was late, Miss Marple. Good evening, Inspector.
I suppose you knew about this compact business, too.
Well, I...
Before I did, no doubt.
Well, you see...
I thought it best to bring the inspector in on this after all, Mr. Springer.
Yes, very wise, very wise.
I'm glad you think so. Withholding information from the police is a very serious matter.
Oh, I know, Inspector, and I'm most awfully sorry. Will you take tea?
Thank you, no. Don't you realize what this means, the compact having been stolen from your room?
Coffee, perhaps.
It means that the thief and the murderer are almost certainly one and the same, and that he or she is in that house, and that your life may be in great danger.
Oh, I say, do you really think so?
I must ask you to give the whole thing up immediately, tonight.
Yes, of course. Indeed, you must, Miss Marple.
She paces thoughtfully away.
Very well, then, I'll give in my notice tomorrow.
Good. That's settled, then.
It has to be a month's notice, you know. Will you have a small beer, Inspector?
Miss Marple, I... Oh, what's the use?
Craddock grabs his hat and heads for the door.
Good night.
Good night. Well, now, how did you get on at the probate registry?
Oh, really, Miss Marple, I think, in view of what the inspector said...
Did you see the will?
Yes.
And what did it say?
Well, old Mr. Ackenthorpe's father obviously didn't get on very well with him.
I'm not surprised at that. Go on.
You see, the house and the income from the family fortune are his, but he can't touch the fortune itself. That's the first point.
Inspector Craddock, yes? With the sergeant.
The second point is that the fortune goes to his children on his death. That is to Emma, Cedric, Harold and Albert.
Yes.
Two of the others named in the will, Edith and Edmund, are already dead, of course.
Hmm. Not much more for the rest, eh?
Well, young Alexander, Edith's son, gets her share.
Oh, what about the boy's father, Eastley?
Next of kin, only come in for a share. There's no issue of a marriage.
So Eastley's only interest is how much young Alexander gets.
Dr. Quimper to see you, sir.
Oh, yes, send him in. Your call to the probate registry has been very useful.
Thanks. Morning, Inspector.
Oh, morning, Doctor. Sit down.
Thank you. Have you found out who the woman is yet?
The French police haven't come up with anything so far, sir.
Oh, you are working on the assumption that she's French, then?
The clothes and makeup did turn out to be made in Paris, yes. Hmm.
Is that what you wanted to see me about?
No, sir. I understand last Christmas, old Mr. Ackenthorpe had a stomach upset.
Yes, he's inclined to overindulge when there's too much rich food about.
But he said you'd asked him a lot of questions. As though you suspected arsenic poisoning.
All right. For the moment, I did suspect something was a bit odd.
Didn't you run a food test?
No.
Why not?
Well, it was nothing positive. No history of chronic gastric troubles, such as one would expect to find in the classic method of arsenic poisoning.
You mean small doses administered regularly?
Exactly.
Excuse me.
He sits behind his desk.
Yes? Oh, put her on. Miss Ackenthorpe.
Emma.
Quimper frowns.
Yes. Hello. Oh, morning.
I've had a letter.
I see. Well, would you read the letter to me?
Craddock jots down notes with a pencil. The doctor sits opposite him with his hat in his lap, listening with a furrowed brow.
Thank you. I'd like to send round to that letter, if you don't mind, Miss Ackenthorpe. Yes, we'll check with the French police. Thank you. Goodbye. Do you know what that was about, Doctor?
Yes, I think I do.
Why didn't you tell me?
I'm in love with Emma, Inspector. I want to marry her. And I told her I thought she ought to tell you about this.
But you didn't insist.
No. It was important to me, to us, that she made up her own mind.
I understand, Doctor.
Well, thank you. Is that all?
Doctor, do you think the dead woman is Martine Ackenthorpe?
Well, who else could it be?
Do you think she was killed by a member of the family?
I'd rather not answer that, Inspector.
All right, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Craddock watches the doctor leave. He stands for a moment with his hands in his pockets, then sinks into the chair at his desk. The sergeant enters.
Well, sir?
I'm worried, Bacon.
About the doctor?
No, not him. I'm worried about Miss Marple.
Nighttime. A flash of lightning illuminates the gloomy Ackenthorpe mansion. Hillman walks the wolfish German shepherd across the yard on a lead. Inside, Miss Marple, in a white-aproned maid's uniform, kicks open the kitchen door and carries a tray of dirty dishes to the sink. She jumps as another flash lights up the windows of the expansive kitchen. Setting a pot of milk on the stove to warm, she stiffens at a sound. She cocks her ear toward the door, then creeps into the hall, gazing up the stairs. A dim light falls from the second floor. Behind her, a man in a suit steps from the shadows.
Looking for something, sir?
Yeah.
Are you all right?
Yes, perfectly, thank you, Mr. Eastley.
What is it you want?
Well, I just thought I'd take up the old boy's nightcap and save you the trouble.
Oh, that's kind of you. It is ready.
In the kitchen, Eastley looks on as Miss Marple takes the saucepan of milk from the stove. The lights darken for a moment.
Storm, I expect. The electricity supply is rather shaky, like the rest of the place. You're a little shaky too, aren't you?
Oh, no, not at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
She breathes a sigh of relief as Eastley leaves with the milk. Startled, Miss Marple grips the edge of the table. The lights flicker, then expire completely, leaving the kitchen dark except for flashes from outside. With a faltering hand, she pulls a book of matches from her apron pocket and lights a lantern on a sideboard near the door. Carrying it into the hallway, she sets it on a post at the bottom of the stairs and turns to a fuse box on the wall. Two rows of clothespin-sized porcelain fuses line the inside of the cabinet. Miss Marple pulls out fuses one at a time and inspects them in the lantern light. She gazes wide-eyed at the stairs. A pair of feet descend from the inky darkness. A figure gradually comes into view. Pajama-clad legs, two hands, and finally a face. Alexander.
Oh, my goodness, what are you doing?
Looking for light.
You ought to be asleep.
I happen to be reading. Oh. May I ask what you are doing?
Trying to provide light.
Oh, I see. Well, you won't find it there, you know.
Indeed.
It's a power failure. Often happens. May I borrow this?
Alexander, come back.
Good night, Jane.
He snatches the lantern and runs upstairs. As Miss Marple lights a match, a beam of bright light shines on her face.
Who's that? Who is it?
She squints at the source, a blonde man with a flashlight.
Oh, Mr. Sidgwick. It's a power failure. Often happens. I'll have to find some candles, if you'll excuse me.
Just a minute. My sister says you started work here only a few days ago.
Yes.
You don't look like a domestic to me.
I have to earn my living, Mr. Ackenthorpe, like anybody else.
But the day after you arrived, the body was discovered. You found it, didn't you?
What makes you think that?
Because it fits. And so neatly. You telephoned the police, didn't you?
I assure you I am not the person who telephoned the police.
You are not?
No.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
I have already told you.
The lights turn on.
Well, I'm going to watch you very closely, Miss Marple. Jane. Oh, Hillman. I want to have a word with you.
She turns from the door and hobbles upstairs. Later, Miss Marple lies asleep with a candle burning low at her bedside. Rousing, she props herself up on one elbow and stares at the curtain between her room and the next. It billows gently. She turns on a lamp and pulls a golf club from the covers. Armed and ready, she creeps to the curtain. She whips it back. She switches on the light and stalks into the room, wielding the driver. Except for the old furniture, the room is empty. She runs to the door at the other side of the room and out onto the stairs. Emma stumbles into the hallway below, clutching her stomach. Miss Marple runs to her aid. Albert writhes on his bedroom floor. Alexander arrives.
Alexander, call the doctor. Quickly!
He gapes at Albert, then runs away.
There's nothing I could do for him, I'm afraid, Inspector. How are the others now?
Well, MS Cedric, Harold, and Eastley have had only comparatively minor effects. And the old man will be all right. He's a tough old bird. They'll be recovered by morning.
Quimper and Craddock step into the hall.
No doubt about the cause.
No. They're all poisoned.
No. Thank you, Doctor.
Quimper! Quimper!
Harold, I might have expected him to bellow the hardest.
In the kitchen at the long table, the sergeant and a gray-haired investigator spoon food into glass vials.
This is the last chicken stock.
Thank you.
Miss Morphle sets a large pot in front of the sergeant. He ladles stock into a vial. Craddock enters.
Finished, Sergeant?
Just about, sir.
See that stuff gets down to the lab right away. We're pretty well all through for tonight.
The investigator packs the vials in a case, snaps it shut, and follows the sergeant out. Miss Marple sinks into a chair.
Well, Miss Marple?
Mushroom soup, curried duck, rice, and apple pie.
Thank you. Mushroom soup out of a can, I suppose.
Certainly not. Half a pound of mushrooms, chicken stock, milk, flour, butter, lemon juice, touch of herbs.
Mushrooms.
I had some of the soup myself. Superb.
I'm sure. The pie.
I'm afraid I never can resist my own pie, Inspector. Anybody else's, of course.
The curry.
Exactly. Good, of course. But rice, you see. Fattening. And as I was having the pie...
Where did the duck come from?
Oh, those. Mr. Harold chopped them. He seems to be rather fond of killing things.
The boy, Alexander, he doesn't seem to have had any curry either.
No. Not a good appeal to him. Curious child.
Well, did anyone come into the kitchen while the cooking was going on?
Not while I was there. I do have other duties, you know.
Anyone could have come in then? 6 people are poisoned. Only one dies.
I'm thinking about that too, Inspector.
Excuse me, sir. Message from the Chief Constable. He's waiting up to hear your report.
All right.
In person, sir.
Right, Sergeant. Get the car around. I'll be out in a minute.
Very good.
Craddock cocks his dimpled chin.
I think the two killings are connected. Don't you?
Yes, I do.
Now, we've got to find out who has that compact, Miss Marple.
So far, I've only been able to search one room.
No? Whose?
Unfortunately, Albert's.
Oh. Miss Marple, I have to go now.
Oh, yes, I know. A policeman's work is never done.
Nor a woman's. I was going to say, please be careful. And if you do think of anything, I hope you'll take me into your confidence this time.
Miss Marple smiles at the pleasant-faced inspector as he goes, and she yawns, stretching out her arms. Getting up from her chair, she pushes up her sleeves and carries a soup tureen to the sink. Daytime. A police car stops at the curb outside the station. The sergeant, in his trench coat and hat, steps out of the sedan. Inside, Inspector Craddock sits at his desk reading a thick volume entitled The Ideal Cookery Book.
The lab boys turned it up as arsenic. In the curry. Not a lot, just enough for stomach aches all the way around. Not enough to kill.
So Albert must have had an extra dose.
Yes, but why poison the others at all?
If the poisoner is a member of the family, he had to be ill as well.
Well, say it isn't, sir. I mean, that gardener of theirs, Hillman. There's talk in the local pub that he's in for a nice little bequest when old Ackenthorpe goes. What is a possibility, sir?
Getting the dead woman, Bacon. This poisoning makes it pretty certain to me that she was Martine Ackenthorpe.
Well, French police come up with something then?
Only if there's no record of a marriage. The village where Edmund Ackenthorpe was stationed was blown to bits during the war. All the files in the town hall destroyed.
Well then, sir?
Well, don't you see, Bacon, it's the pattern of the killings. Only a member of the family would want to get rid of her, too. Yes, kill off all your relations in easy stages, except the old man. When he dies a natural death, inherit the entire fortune as well as the property. Albert must have got his second dose after dinner. Possibly in a drink.
Now in Ackenthorpe's bedroom, Hillman pours a drink from a crystal decanter and hands it to the old man. Miss Marple enters with a tray.
I shouldn't drink that.
Why not?
Because it's lunchtime.
Oh, what is it?
Beef broth, baked custard.
Beef broth, but I ordered beef steak.
The doctor said beef broth.
What are the blazes with him? I give the orders in this house. I'm sick of slops. Take it away.
Certainly.
She takes his drink and the decanter with her and leaves him with the tray.
Hillman, another bottle.
Surely you realize that if the woman was Martine, by showing that letter to the police, you've pointed the finger at one of us. Not only for her death, but Albert's too.
Exactly. One of us.
I might have expected that from you.
Oh, come now. You're thinking along exactly the same lines as I am. If you didn't do it, that is. I'd probably think it was me.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
Or even you, dear Emma.
Look, I think we've had just about enough of this nonsense.
I bet the police don't think it's nonsense.
Oh, now listen, Cedric. Say what you like about the rest of us, but please leave Emma out of it.
Well, it could be argued, you know, that Emma kept that letter to herself until she could use it to her own advantage.
Glaring, Eastley squares off with Cedric.
I think you'd better explain that.
Well, let's face it. The moment Martine's body was discovered, everyone in his family was under suspicion, including you, Emma. And the moment you produced that letter voluntarily, everyone was under suspicion, excluding you.
Harold eyes his sister.
I hadn't thought of it like that.
You must be round the bend. That woman was strangled. Do you think your sister capable of doing a thing like that?
Oh, but Emma's an attractive woman, don't you think so?
Well?
Well, an attractive woman doesn't need to do her own dirty work, does she?
Come along, Emma. I think we'd better leave them to it.
Now, Eastley. Emma has her eye on the good doctor, you know. I'm afraid it's not going to be so easy for you to marry into the family for a second time. Oh, that hit home, didn't it?
Yes. And I'm about ready to break your blasted neck.
Very possibly. But tell me something first. Do you deny meeting Emma secretly in the grounds the night before the body was discovered?
Well, I...
Hillman saw you, you know.
All right, we did meet that night, yes.
He asked me to intercede with Father.
Oh? What for?
I wanted to borrow money, if you must know.
In one of the bedrooms, Miss Marple takes a man's suit from a wardrobe and hurriedly searches all the pockets. Behind her, a rifle lies across the bed. Returning the suit to the wardrobe, the stout maid moves swiftly to the dresser. Opening one of the top drawers, she finds a large pair of black leather gloves atop a stack of neatly folded white undershirts.
Oh, my goodness.
She shuts the drawer. Downstairs, a trim figure steps into the foyer. Harold, in a plaid suit and plain tie, hesitates for a moment, then jogs up the stairs. Meanwhile, Miss Marple pulls back the covers of the bed and slides her hands between the sheets. As she lifts up the corner of the mattress, Harold appears in the doorway.
What are you doing?
Making up the bed.
But you made it up this morning.
Yes, but the pillow slips need changing.
They look perfectly all right to me.
But not to me. Oh, what am I doing?
She begins to leave with a pillow, then throws it back on the bed. Now, Hillman and Mrs. Kidder in the kitchen.
Oh, I do wish that woman would hurry up. They know I don't like being here after dark.
What are you feared of? Some men will get you?
Hillman eats at the kitchen table.
You know, it's funny how things always come together. My sister's eldest had measles, and then her Ernie fell and broke his arm, and her husband come out all over with boils, all in the same week. You wouldn't believe it, would you? It's going to be the same thing here. First that nasty murder, and then Mr. Albert poisoned. Who's going to be the next, I'd like to know? Things always go in threes.
Well, here you are, Mrs. Kidder. I'm sorry to have kept you, but the doctor has been with Mr. Ackenthorpe.
Long wait for very little.
The sour-faced maid leaves through the kitchen's back door.
The younger generation. Well, I don't know.
Outside, Mrs. Kidder, in her overcoat and beret, wheels her bicycle along the dark, brambly driveway. A dim light shines from the bicycle's headlight as she steps tentatively forward. She jumps, drawing in a quick breath. Glancing around, she pushes ahead doggedly. Suddenly, the narrow beam from the headlight runs across a rifle lying in the path. Beyond it, a man in a plaid suit lies face down among the bushes. In the kitchen, Hillman looks up from his meal and runs out, with Miss Marple following close behind him. He finds Mrs. Kidder along the drive and shakes her.
What's the matter with you?
They follow her gaze to the body.
It's Mr. Arnold.
Daytime in Inspector Craddock's office.
Point is, did he use this on himself, or did somebody else pull the trigger?
Well, it led up if it was suicide. Harold killed the other two, got cold feet, and took what is laughingly called the easy way out.
All of them knew he liked an hour or two shooting before dinner whenever he was at the hall.
But he was shot from a range of about 2 inches.
All right. Someone he knows comes up to him, casually asks to have a look at the gun, and...
Still could have been suicide, though.
If I were the murderer, that's exactly what I'd want us to think. One thing's sure, we can't risk any more killings. Come on.
Where to, sir?
All. I'm going to find that compact if I have to turn the whole place and everyone in it upside down.
Oh, excuse me, sir. There's a lady to see you, sir. Miss Marple.
Oh, come in. Good afternoon, Miss Marple.
You were going somewhere?
Yes.
Then I'll come to the point at once.
Removing her glove, she pulls the compact from the pocket of her wool skirt suit and places it on the corner of the desk.
A beautiful little piece, isn't it?
The inspector picks up the case and snaps it shut.
Who had it?
Young Alexander.
What?
I should have realized, of course, that boy's incorrigible. Playing it in the middle of the night like that. Typical.
So we're back where we started.
Oh, no, Inspector. I think I know who our murderer is. The difficulty is going to be getting him to show his hand.
Craddock starts to smile.
Sit down, Miss Marple.
Thank you.
Nighttime at the manor. Emma plays solitaire in the parlor. Eastley sits nearby, and Cedric reclines on a sofa, sketching on a pad.
Oh, hold that expression, Emma. Oh, pity you sported. What's the matter, darling? Things not working out for you?
How do you manage to make everything you say sound like an insinuation?
He works at it.
For heaven's sake, stop fussing, Quimper. If I wish to come down, I shall do so. I think this, Joe Hillman.
Father, don't you think...
Now, don't you start.
Sorry, Emma, but you know what he's like when his mind is made up.
I'm not going to stay up there all alone. Might get murdered in my bed. At least there's some safety in numbers.
I quite agree with you, Father.
Well, that makes a nice change. I want a drink. They're not you, Quimper.
Then I must be going.
Hillman drapes a blanket over the old man.
Don't smother me with it, man. Put it by my knees.
Oh, well, this is all very nice and cozy. How about a rubber bridge? Oh, it's just a thought.
Dressed in a smart little suit and tie, Alexander walks into the parlor, gazing at the compact in his palm. They all stare at him.
What have you got there, boy?
Oh, a charming little thing. French, Second Empire. Pretty valuable, I'd say.
Where'd you get it?
It belongs to Miss Marple.
Huh? You better give it back to her, hadn't you?
I only borrowed it. I'll drop it in on my way to bed.
Ackenthorpe raises his eyebrows and Eastley frowns at the boy as he leaves. Later in her bedroom, Miss Marple, wearing a long house dress with a dark print, rests the compact on the corner of a small table. She arranges the table and an armchair in the corner of the room, facing a mirror, then settles into the chair. The door to the hallway is to her right, and to her left, the curtain between her room and the next. She glances up at the mirror and leans from side to side, checking her view. Picking up her knitting, she pulls a length of yarn from her ball and makes a few stitches. Miss Marple freezes suddenly and stares at the door. She nervously resumes her knitting as the door swings slowly open.
Come in, Doctor.
You're expecting me.
Didn't Alexander tell you?
Tell me what?
He eyes the compact on the table.
Forgetful boy. I have a sore throat, Doctor, and I asked him to ask you to be kind enough to have a look at it before you left.
I see.
I'm sorry to trouble you. I haven't had one of these throats in years.
Well, you've been lucky, Miss Marple. Any headaches?
No, just the sore throat.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have a look.
Quimper picks up the compact.
This is rather attractive.
Yes, isn't it?
Where did you get it?
I found it.
Oh? Where?
In the stables here.
Really? Open wide, please. Say ah.
Ah.
No inflammation. Don't you think that was a little dishonest? Keeping the compact, I mean?
Under the circumstances, Doctor, no.
Is there any swelling?
I don't think so.
Miss Marple watches in the mirror as he examines her throat with his hands.
I've seen you like that once before, Doctor. Your hands at a woman's throat. It was on a train, and you were strangling her.
His eyes bulge in a menacing glare, and he tightens his grip on her shoulder. Then, with trembling hands, he lets go and stands before her.
That's quite an allegation.
I have a few more.
Oh?
You come for the compact because you had given it to that woman, and it might be traced back to you. I think she was your wife.
Do you?
You killed her after you had written that letter to Emma, signing it Martine Ackenthorpe.
Why should I do that?
The murder, so that you would then be free to marry Emma. The letter, so that people would think the dead woman was Martine and look among the family for the killer. Never at you.
Quimper gently nods his head and paces to the door. He turns the lock. Miss Marple watches the doctor from her chair.
How did you arrive at this fascinating hypothesis?
It was I who found her body. Martine was, or is, for all I know, a Normandy peasant. The dead woman had never worked on a farm in her life. I saw her hands.
Go on.
Certainly. You then proceeded to augment your prospects by eliminating Albert and Harold.
How conceivably?
You contrived to introduce arsenic into my curry, which I find unforgivable, by the way. Knowing that you would be called on to deal with the after effects, easy then to give Albert his final dose in the medicine.
And Harold?
You shot him and made it look like suicide.
Ingenious, I must admit.
More than that. Now that you are here to secure your dead wife's compact, a fair case.
He holds a syringe.
Yes. A pity you won't be able to present it.
One more murder, Doctor. Might be one too many.
This won't look like murder, Miss Marple. The death certificate signed by me, of course, will register heart failure.
A hand grips Quimper's arm. The sergeant takes the syringe.
You all right?
Yes, sir.
You're under arrest, and I must warn you
that everything I've said has been taken down and will be used in evidence. You are right about everything, of course.
As Quimper reaches for his case, the inspector and sergeant move to stop him, but the doctor simply picks up the compact and hands it to Miss Marple with a smile and a nod. With the compact in her hand, she watches the sergeant lead Quimper out. Craddock rests a consoling hand on her shoulder, then turns to leave.
You're a very brave woman, Miss Marple. Good night.
Miss Marple faints onto the chair, her arms hanging limply at her sides. The inspector rushes back into the room, glances around desperately, then fans her with his hat. She rouses and smiles feebly at him. A relieved grin spreads across his face. Now Ackenthorpe tugs at the service bell in his bedroom. Arranging a handkerchief in the pocket of his silk polka-dotted robe, he sits down facing the door.
About time, too.
I was coming up to see you, you know, before leaving.
No need to leave.
I have my own home, Mr. Ackenthorpe.
Sell it.
Why on earth should I?
Well, taking one thing and another, I mean, you're a fair cook, and you seem to have your wits about you, and, well, I've decided to marry you. Well?
Well, I'm honored, of course.
Of course you are, but come to the point.
I'm afraid that cannot be.
Why?
Well, if ever I do embark on such a venture, there is someone else.
Nonsense. I don't believe it. Who on earth would have you?
Apparently you, for one, Mr. Ackenthorpe. Goodbye.
She grasps his hand firmly, then strides out, carrying her gloves and handbag. Ackenthorpe stares at his outstretched hand, then at the door.
The woman must be completely unbalanced.
Mr. Stringer waits outside.
Oh, Miss Marple, I'm so glad.
How good of you to come.
Let me give you a hand.
Thank you.
He takes her valise and opens the door to a large black sedan. Miss Marple steps in, carrying the golf clubs. From the corner of the house, Alexander looks on with a mischievous grin. A sign on the back of the car reads, "Just Married," and a string of tin cans trails from the bumper. Words appear. The End, a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture produced at MGM British Studios, Borehamwood, England. Credits roll. Margaret Rutherford as Miss Marple. Arthur Kennedy as Quimper. Muriel Pavlo as Emma. James Robertson Justice as Ackenthorpe. Thorley Walters as Cedric. Charles Tingwell as Craddock. Conrad Phillips as Harold. Ronald Howard as Eastley. Joan Hickson as Mrs. Kidder. Stringer Davis as Mr. Stringer. Ronnie Raymond as Alexander. Gerald Cross as Albert. Michael Golden as Hillman.